You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, baby, we are back for another episode of the X-Men podcast. Thank you so much for checking out the show. Yeah, so, you know, I'm trying to get back to some version of consistency after the break. And, you know, I'm home and I'm lining up interviews. And, you know me, I don't like to spoil them or jinx them before I actually do the interview. So I'm not going to say who it is, but hopefully by the weekend, I'll have three new interviews, and then I'm booking a bunch of stuff for next week as well, so I can kind of backlog some stuff. So hopefully I have, you know, something to rely on in Europe when Bad Wolves goes. Oh, by the way, Bad Wolves just announced 4 UK headline dates in December. So after we finish up with Volbeat, because we weren't on the UK portion of that tour, we really wanted to get over to the UK while we're over there. So we're playing London, Manchester, Birmingham, and Glasgow. So the tickets go on sale on Friday, badwolvesnation.com, and check it out. You know, these are our first like real headline shows since the album came out. So it's kind of a big deal. Okay, what else is going on? So the last show I put out, I had actually recorded all my intros and outros a week earlier and intended to get it out a week earlier. So it was like me kind of anticipating the God Forbid reunion show, but not talking about it because at that point it hadn't happened, even though by the time I released the show, it had. So let me tell you about the God Forbid reunion show. I think it went great and very stressful. You know, as you would think when you haven't done a show with a band in that long, and you know, we had Nick Hippa, new member as part of everything. But, you know, Nick was a dream, total pro, the nicest guy and coolest guy to hang out with. Like, seriously, like, hanging out with Nick is like an antidepressant. It's amazing. And me and him, like, really locked in as guitar players. And that was really incredible. But, no, I mean, the thing I noticed, because we ended up doing all our base of operations out of Raleigh, North Carolina, which is about 90 minutes from where the festival had taken place. So I got in like a day early. And of course, you know, I think I talked about this on last week, where it was like the van broke down and gear didn't show up. And it was just, you know, kind of a comedy of errors and things going wrong right off right at the front. But luckily that was pretty much the worst of our problems. We figured everything out. We had a lot of help in Raleigh. Shout out to Will Goodyear, ex Between the Baird and Me. I think he's playing with, which band is he playing? He told me, I forgot the name of the band. Anyway, Will Goodyear is the man. But honestly, it was like just getting around all the dudes was just cool. Just hanging out with everyone was just a good vibe. You know, everyone wanted to be there and enjoy each other's company. And that was great. And then, you know, we rehearsed on, I think it was a Wednesday. And I tell you, man, first thing I kind of noticed was like, God damn, man. Like we were pretty locked in, pretty, you know, from kind of the word go at rehearsal. So like, you know, do like one pass through the songs. I'm like, man, this is going to be pretty sick. I kind of almost forget how heavy the songs are, how intense they are. and just fun to play. And when you get everyone in that room, man, there's something special there. And Nick was completely locked into that chemistry, you know, because he gets it, you know, he gets the sound and understands who we are and bring his own experience into that. You know, it was badass. So like each day we rehearsed, you know, so I did, sorry to get a little confusing. So we rehearsed that day. Then it was like a late rehearsal because we were, you know, waiting for gear to show up. It was a whole thing. And then we did an early rehearsal a Thursday because Bad Wolves had a show at Blue Ridge as well. So did that rehearsal. And each day we rehearsed, it got better and tighter. And I was like, and you know, we were tweaking our tones. I was like, you know, working on, you know, because that was the first time I used the Kemper with the power amp and, you know, just dialing that in. And, you know, I was just like, man, I'm like, if we sound this good at the show, we're going to be golden, you know? And so, you know, then show day comes and it's raining and we're like, oh man, it's going to be a rough day. We get there and they don't have a dressing room for us. They don't have our rider. We're just like, dude, we're getting like, I'm like, are we like a quote unquote headliner on the stage or something like that? And just getting no respect at Blue Ridge. But eventually we get a dressing room. You know, we get some rider stuff and, you know, we're setting up, you know, and it's tough because it's hard for me because I'm that guy where I'm very competitive. You know, I want to have the best show and I want to kick ass. And so I actually like purposely tried not to watch too many bands before we played, because I don't want to like compare our show to their show. I just wanted to like focus on what we were doing. And if you were just like basing on how big bands are like in the totality of their career, like there's no way we should have been playing in the slot. So like our stage before us, it was Butcher Babies. Actually, no, it was Crowbar, Butcher Babies, Chelsea Grin, Mushroom Head, and Queensryche. All played before us. Fucking Queensryche. You kidding me? And then after us was Gwar and Tenacious D. And, you know, straight up, like the other bands there had bigger crowds than us. But almost like I would expect that to be the case based on how, you know, big some of those bands are. Dude, Mushroomhead's fucking popular. You know, don't be sleeping on the head. They crushed it. People were loving them. But also when we played, this festival just had like a lot of stages. So the same time we were playing, it was Motionless in White, who's like blowing all kinds of up right now. They're just huge. Acacia Strain, who's a very, very popular band in their right, you know, coming from more our scene. And then I think when another band was ending, then Thrice started playing. So we had a lot of competition. But like when we started playing, it you know, the crowd was just chanting the name. And like I said, it wasn't the biggest crowd, but they were just God forbid fucking hype probably two times before we played. And then, you know, we get out there and the sound, like for me, it was like I could hear my guitar and it sounded sick. And for the drums, I could really hear the kick drums, but really nothing else. And, you know, I couldn't hear Nick and I couldn't hear the snare drum. But so it wasn't like, I don't feel like I played like my tightest show because I couldn't really hear as well as I would have liked to, but it was good enough to really feel the intensity. And it was intense, man. It was just it's interesting playing those songs in a live setting because you just react differently to it. Your body moves differently. The way I don't know, there's just something there that's special, you know? And it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And then like, was kind of cool as we were playing was it was like raining and we had our backdrop from Constitution of Treason and, you know, it started getting dark while we're playing. So all of a sudden the lights start happening and there's actually a cool vibe. And as we play, like more and more people start coming. So by the end of the set, it was actually like pretty filled out. And then this was kind of like our fault, but also the festival's fault where, oh, I forgot. Oh yeah. Power Man 5000 also played on that stage before us. A lot of bands with like platinum records played before us. But anyway, the show was running late, like the stage was running late. And I think our set was a little longer than our 45. So they cut us off. And so we didn't get to play End of the World, which was a bit of a bummer. But people were pumped up, you know, and I think it was a good feeling. So I was just, you know, for me, it's like that thing of being relieved that you pulled it off and everything worked out. We captured the show. We brought in this guy, Hector Gallardo, to film it. And by the time this comes out, there'll be a little like mini preview thing. It's like kind of half of it is like interview footage and rehearsal footage and stuff from the show. But, you know, eventually I think we're going to put out the kind of mini documentary talking about the whole reunion and then put the whole show out at some point. Hopefully it's not too sloppy because we were rocking out, you know, and having fun. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with, you know, certain things. Like, I wish I would have played that tighter. Like, I can tell I'm kind of rushing in spots, especially some of my leads, and that always like bums me out, or my vibrato is not exactly what I want it to be. But it's always tough when you're just doing one show, because on a tour you can tweak and get better at stuff, and maybe halfway through the tour you kind of hit the ground running. But yeah, it was really great, man. So I appreciate everyone who checked us out that day. And there's talks about doing some more stuff, and kind of as that happens, I'll let you guys know. And hopefully, you know, because I really want to do something around our home area, but it's tough with guys with jobs and kids and can't just book it. And also with Bad Wolves' schedule, which is very busy. We're going to be gone for 2 months in Europe with Volbeat. So, but anyway, just wanted to give you guys that little update. I've been home now for about 10 days, and I'm kind of got that like post-tour blues a little bit, where you're like trying to find your footing and, you know, your routine. Like it takes a minute. And I think just that you get that natural high every day of playing a show, and you don't get that at home. And I think you just get a little, I don't know, it's like having the Mondays every day, and it takes me a little bit to figure it out, but getting through, baby. Got a lot of work to do, but I'm always disappointed when I feel like I'm not being as productive as I want to be. That's a theme for me. I know, something to work on, but I'm going to get there. Oh, and by the way, there are new Doc Coyle custom guitar picks up on my website, doccoyle.net. Volume 2, the custom Dunlop pick pack. Get them before they're gone. I put them up today, and about a third of the stock is already gone. So I think these things are going to go fast. All right, without further ado, we have three guests today, and they are the hosts of the 2020 podcast, as well as members of the band Lost Symphony. It's Benny Goodman, Siobhan Cronin, who also plays violin in Starset, and Corey Peza. So enjoy this conversation. I think you guys will like it. Thank you guys so much for being on the X-Men. You know, we have, let's go through this. So many people. I think this, no, I've had this many people on the show two other times on my symposium shows.
Okay. But
we have Benny Goodman, Siobhan Cronin, and Corey Peza.
Boom.
They are Lost Symphony, as well as, is it 2020 podcast or You've Been 2020 podcast?
It's just the 2020 podcast.
2020 podcast. All right.
Yeah, we made it a verb. So that was our whole thing. Like, you got 2020'd, but we really got 2020'd.
So what happens when it's no longer 2020? Is it just like the decade itself is kind of being 2020'd?
Well, here's the thing. Well, 2020 is also hindsight, right? Mm-hmm. So we're taking a look back at the lives and careers of our guests. You know.
Yeah, we have to constantly rethink how to make it continually relevant, of course, because, yeah, 2020 happened and went by, and then we're like, all right, how are we going to continue to make this about, you know, 2020 hindsight and, you know.
Well, we basically failed to launch because, you know, remember the year 2020, remember that? So
nope.
2020 essentially, yeah, exactly, essentially means you got 2020, you got screwed, you got totally, like, we made our podcast because of that year. Like, we're like, my mom's like, can you DJ from your basement? Like, podcast, mom, streaming, Can I do that? So we got 2020 into doing it. And then we realized that nobody got that joke. We tried like sharing it and marketing it, and that we're terrible at that. So then Corey, being smart, being like, we can't get a new URL. We can't rebrand this. Let's just make it mean something way smarter than that. And here we are.
Now you got to do like all the fast food chains where like it'll be, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and then it's just KFC. Dunkin' Donuts, now it's just Dunkin'. Now it's just, you just 20. You know what I'm saying? Not Kanye. Yeah.
It'll become two.
I like that. I like that. What's your 20? That's good. We're going to steal that.
There we go.
All right. Marketing 101. Coyle. All right. You've learned it here first. But no, I'm actually interested just to kind of introduce the genesis of not only the podcast that you guys put together, but also the band that you formed, Lost Symphony. I was looking at this, and it seemed like all the music started coming out in 2020. But then I was reading the bio, it said you kind of started doing this stuff several years before that. So is it just kind of a coincidence that the band stuff kind of started to come out at the same time as the podcast, or did the band lead into the podcast? Please give me some insight on that.
I think Corey and I were like Nostradamus in that we had a COVID band before COVID existed. We had a band that nobody knows each other. We just send tracks to, like, all those things, all the people in the music industry had to do. We were just doing that anyway before. And really the way it started was, you know, I always wanted to make music that was in my head, because not only have I had to produce a lot of music that wasn't my thing, I've DJed for years. So I'm constantly playing music that, like, oh, the song sucks. I'm like, I know everything I'm playing tonight is going to suck. That's my job, is to play sucky music. So I wanted to make not sucky music. And I know that you're with me on this. I love film soundtracks. So, for example, you got John Carpenter on your wall, on your arm today. So
there
it is. I know that you're with me on this. I'm wearing my Evil Dead shirt, you know. I always love soundtracks, and one of the cool things about soundtracks, and especially about me being in the band, is I don't talk, which my voice is really obnoxious. So on the music, there's no singing. It's basically everything I loved about, like, Iron Maiden and Trans-Siberian Orchestra and Chopin and, you know, all the soundtracks to all the movies that you and I grew up listening to, but with just crazy guitar playing over it. And that was kind of our idea. But Marty Friedman's not going to come to my studio. Nuno doesn't even want to talk to me. He barely texts me back. He's just like, no. So, like, the best I could hope for was to send these guys stuff and say, please just play on our song. And it kind of happened. But
yeah, you embodied the spirit of 2020 before the show. You were 2020-ing all of us, even before 2020, into being in your band.
Tell them how I met you.
Yeah, so this is actually a good story. So I met Ben because I had just joined Starset. I think this was 2017, and I was playing a rock festival in Fort Myers. And I'm in, you know, those trailers that they set up for the dressing rooms. And I'm in there, like, warming up, playing some, like, classical stuff. And in walks this guy that I've never seen before with, like, long hair with a guitar. He's like, oh, is that, like, Vivaldi? Is that Paganini? And I'm like, yeah, wait, that's the first time that's happened to me at a rock festival. Like, nobody cares about me practicing. So, you know, I start talking to this guy, and then I find out it's Ollie from All That Remains. And, you know, we started hitting it off as friends, you know, started talking more about music. And he's like, oh, I got to connect you with this guy, Ben, that I'm working on this project with him. So lo and behold, a couple of months later, I'm flying out to see Ben, who I've never met before. And I walked in kind of, a lot of the music sort of existed in concept and some tracks, but, you know, it had been in the works for, I think, a few years, right, Ben?
Yeah, that's like, yeah, kind of to your point, Doc, is that these songs started long before there was ever really a thought of it being a project. It was more, I remember Ben kind of, we were working on other projects. He's like, hey, I got to show you this thing my brother and I did. And I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. No one's ever going to want to listen to that, but it's awesome. I like it. So we were kind of playing around with those tunes for the longest time. You know, I would lay down some bass and we'd send it around. So we got Jason Costa from All That Remains actually played drums on one of the tracks. And then we found our guitar Jedi, which Ben can talk about, Kelly up in Canada.
Well, that's kind of the thing. So we made the most non-marketable band in the history of time. It is instrumental. Like, some of it is shred metal. I wouldn't say that the new stuff we're doing is shred metal, but, like, it's got some cacophony, Marty Friedman, Jason Becker vibes to it. And, you know, a little bit of Dream Theater and a ton of, like, classical music, like, straight up classical, not like we instilled classical in it. it's got classical stuff in it. And literally nobody other than like one guy in Japan cares about this kind of music. But we said we were going to make it. And then I convinced Jason Costa from All That Remains. And when I say convinced, I mean, I had to go down and drink with this dude, which if you've ever met Jason Costa.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Way to his heart.
He will drink until you die. I basically, after I got like hyper drunk, I was like, dude, you got to come out to my car and hear this song. And you just got to play on it. He's like, I don't play on people's music, Benny. I barely play on my own band's music. I'm like, come on, dude. And finally, he's like, all right, well, I'll do this experiment. I'm not really allowed to drink too much on stage. So if I could come to your studio and then drink a whole bottle of Crown, which you're going to buy, I want to see how drunk I can get and then still play. I'm like, deal. And that's how Leave Well Enough Alone came about from Lost Symphony. And when he played that song for Ollie, who I have to admit, like after Pantera left us, you know, I didn't really listen to music. So I didn't know how awesome Ollie was. I just got a call from Jason going, hey, man, my guitarist in my band thinks that you guys are awesome because we had this other guy named Kelly Kareluk, this crazy Jedi, insane. Like, he's the most, one of the most insane guitars I've ever seen. He's the guy that like Bumblefoot might get tripped up playing against. I don't know. Ron's also superhuman, but he's on that crazy level. So I convinced that dude, because I found him on the internet, will you play with me? And when Ollie heard him, he was like, I want in on that. And from there on, Ollie kind of gave us credibility because yeah. People care about Ollie. I mean, nobody cared about me in my basement with Corey. But apparently this Ollie dude that looked like a wizard who loved burritos and hanging out and playing Dungeons and Dragons at 2 o'clock in the morning stoned while we listened to Testament. You know, like that dude he loved what I was doing. And was like, dude, we could do more. We could call Bumblefoot. Maybe we could get David Ellison. Maybe we could get this Angel Vivaldi dude you might know. And next thing we know, Ollie's making calls for us. And then that's how we met Siobhan. Siobhan called me while I was DJing a wedding. And I was like, yeah, I need strings. I need an orchestra. You can fly to Boston. It's going to be great. And she literally flew across the country, and I could have been a psycho axe murderer. You know, she just showed up like, yeah, is this where the Lost Symphony recordings are?
Yeah.
But to answer your question, though, yeah, I mean, this would have been what, 2017, 2016, maybe it started. 16, so, so it long preceded the podcast. And, you know, I think the concept of what the music was going to turn into kind of evolved over the time of us getting to know each other as well, you know, because I walked into sort of a certain situation and a certain aesthetic that the music was already established. And it kind of like transformed as we began to know each other and work together and new people came in. So I think it really took probably until 2020 for that to coalesce into a thing, you know, where it was like, all right, it's time to release this. And so the releases really were several years in the making, you know, and developing over time and adding layers and, you know, collaborating with other people.
So were you, Siobhan, were you the only one who was in a touring band? I guess at the time, Ollie was touring and doing stuff like that, but were you the only one kind of doing that? And the other guys are kind of at home holding it down? Or?
Yeah, I think of the core band. I mean, it was really Ben and Brian, his brother, and then Corey and Kelly.
Was the only real musician involved.
Yeah, we're all fake
musicians. No. Well, there was Ollie, but of course, you know, there was a lot of, you know, there were these big like symphonic tracks, and then there would be kind of guest solos. It was sort of the original concept, right? So the people that were playing on it were in touring bands, you know, so Angel Vivaldi, we've had Alex Skolnick.
We duped all those people. What he's saying is, was anyone important before you even came in the room besides Ollie? And the answer is no. We were nobodies. And Ollie is kind of like my geekiness. Yeah, we are still nobodies, but we're still nobody. But Ollie came in and he loved it. And he pretty much was like, yeah, these guys are great. But because Ollie was so good, and because Kelly is so good, and because Jason Costa, when he laid down drums, again, so good to me. And then Siobhan came down and put down, I mean, she's an incredible violinist. I mean, honestly, show me the greatest guitarist and I'll still be like, but there's violin. Like, that's how I feel about her playing in particular. So when people heard these tracks, it was not just me. It was Ollie, Kelly, Siobhan, like Jason, these incredible players. So when we sent, you know, Bumblefoot was the first guy that I was just like, holy crap, I can't believe he's messaging me. That he sent me a message, I think it was on my birthday, and just goes, this music is beautiful. That's all he wrote when he first heard the way all he sent. And it melted my heart. But well, I couldn't believe that guy would be listening to us.
Well, I think it's right up his alley. You know, if you've listened to a lot of the kind of more proggy stuff he's done. And when I listen to you guys' stuff, it just kind of feels of, you know, a Dream Theater or a Symphony X just without the vocals. You know, when I hear it, just sounds like prog metal, you know, which generally tends to be ambitious and be pulling from these, you know, classical and kind of composed influences, you know. So that's what I hear when I hear it. And you kind of guys answered one of my questions, was like, how the hell did you get all these big name people? And seems like you know, Ali did a lot of the heavy lifting, and it all worked out. But that's super important, especially when you're launching something new, you know, just having that credibility, having kind of a bigger name, then people are going to pay attention and take you seriously.
Yeah. Well, no, it's interesting. No, go ahead, Ben.
Well, I'll let you go, but I was just going to say that Ollie started the fire, but where he started the fire, we're kind of like, yeah, call Bumblefoot, because he gave me something to work with. I ran with this. So I think as much as I'm proud of the music, I am proud the fact that, like, I mean, I literally asked Nuno Betancourt for half a decade to play with me. Half a decade. I think the guy's ridiculous.
To play with me. Yeah.
So how do you know Nuno?
Well, I know everybody in Extreme other than Nuno. At the time. So Paul Geary, who now he's a manager now, but the original drummer for Extreme, I've been friends with him for, God, like 10, 12. I mean, I've known him a lot longer than he's known of my existence. But he's an amazing manager. He manages Johnny Depp and Joe Perry. And, you know, I asked him a million times, like, hey, do you think Nuno would do this? And he was always like, no, bud, no. I don't think he's going to do it. Don't bother. And then I'd be like, but do you think Nuno would do it? And finally he's like, I'll send it to him. And then Nuno, I think two or three times, like, this isn't my bag. I think Yngwie was probably the last guitarist that did this kind of thing. I like, he just said all these, like, no, I'm not into it. And finally, after I think we sent him a song. He sent us something back. I think Corey and I insulted him inadvertently. And he was like, fine, whatever. We come back with another song. And we say, you know what? What have we got? I know exactly what it was. He sent me a fuck you email, a text message. He sends very awesome fuck you text messages. Very long, all in capitals. And I'm like, why are you yelling at me? And he said, well, not everybody has like the bombast of Marty Friedman. Something to that extent. And I said, oh, I got him. We'll get Marty Friedman. So I got Marty Friedman. And I went back to Nuno and said, do you want to play with them? And then they both played like they didn't know who that guy was. Like Marty was like, oh, is that the guy, like the More Than Words guy? And then Nuno was like, I've heard he's good, but I just don't know his work. And I couldn't believe.
Both of them lied to your face. You know what that is, though? That's like that badassery, like when you're that good, where like, you know, they ask like Arnold about, you know, Sylvester Stallone, you know, like 1985. They're like, so what do you think about this Sylvester Stallone guy? He's like, who?
Yeah.
I'm the Terminator. You know, when you're that badass, you're just like.
Did you see that Michael Jackson thing where it's like Mike Tyson tries to go and meet him and goes backstage and Mike Tyson goes up to him and he's talking to him. They're smiling. He goes, who are you again? It's the greatest.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of wrangling personalities. And what I was going to say is, you know, it's interesting that Ollie was kind of what kicked it off. But of course, he passed away not long after that. So I have to give Ben a lot of credit. It was a lot of like relentless wrangling. Yeah. And like,
I was going
to
say, Ben's shameless begging is actually what got most of the bigger names on this record. He has no problem just absolutely harassing the hell out of people until they give in. So.
Well, but the music's cool too. It's not like you're sending them some like, you know, backwoods demo or something. Like it is very cool, very high end stuff, you know? So like something that I think as a musician or a guitar player who's of that ilk, they can really kind of sink their teeth into as well. So it's not like you're sending them trash.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's true. But it transformed over time too. I mean, even me stepping into it, you know, I was a classical violinist just getting kind of into the rock world, touring a lot. And so the idea of orchestrating or like going into a studio and someone being like, okay, just do this and not having sheet music, you know, like it was a totally different era in my life too, you know? So a lot of those, the skill that I built in doing it over that time was, you know, pretty remarkable to look back on, you know? So it was interesting. We were kind of, at least in my perspective, diving in and figuring it out as we go in a lot of ways.
So how does this all factor into having a band or like I said, a pandemic band before the pandemic, and then all of a sudden deciding, hey, let's start a podcast kind of factioned around this idea of separation and losing all of our opportunities and our, I don't know, just, you know, the laundry list of things that kind of, I think, you know, the adversity we had to deal with through that time. What was the initial like inspiration to start the podcast?
Well, I know that we were having some meetings around the time of the releases, and one of the biggest issues we had, since we don't have lyrics and a voice, is that how are people going to kind of get to know what the music's about and who we are as musicians? So that's when the podcast idea first started getting bumped around. That may even have been a little prior to like the lockdown and everything. And obviously, when the lockdown came about, Siobhan was in. Well, you were in Russia, weren't you, or something?
Yeah.
On tour with Star Set. So she's coming home. You know, everyone's trying to figure out what's happening. Obviously, I mean, I'm a gigging musician. You're in the wedding band. I'm just in a wedding band. So all my gigs were gone.
I know wedding band music is making a lot of money, player. So I thought you're doing all right.
Hey, I'm not complaining. Not complaining. But the Ben was in a similar situation with DJing and stuff. So we're all finding ourselves, like everyone in the industry, twiddling our thumbs going, what the hell do we do now? We've got all this music that we've been putting together over the years that we're now releasing and packaging and putting all this stuff out and all the content around it. But we still needed something to do to kind of have that creative outlet. And that's when I think the podcast really, we have all these friends that are on the record and all these amazing musicians. Like, hey, why don't we talk to them and ask them about playing on this stuff and get to know them a bit.
We got to give credit a little bit to there. We worked with this guy. He's an industry legend, this Dan Beck, who was responsible for like a lot of Michael Jackson stuff in the 80s. He signed Gloria Estefan. He worked with like Pearl Jam, like he's a industry legend. And he was like, okay, so what skills do we have? We realized that Betty's good at getting people. Maybe you do a podcast, you get. And I'm like, meanwhile, I'm like, well, you come on our podcast, Dan Beck, which is one of our first podcasts. And if you go watch Dan Beck, this guy is literally an oracle of musical knowledge and is literally was on the ground level of the music industry. But he pretty much was like, Benny, you should just leverage that skill. And if you go watch 2020, our podcast, you'll see that we have way higher caliber guests, yourself included, Doc, than we really have people listen. Like, it's usually just my mom and members of Lost Symphony. Like we said, this has kind of been our team building meeting.
Yeah, just like we trick people to be on the records for Lost Symphony, we've tricked them to come on the podcast. And it's a Ponzi scheme. It's a Ponzi scheme that's going to come to, you know, it's going to blow up in our face at some point. But
I even got a band out of it. Shannon Larkin hired me after the podcast.
Yeah.
Godsmack.
To what, for what project?
He has a band, our band now, Apocalypse Blues Revival, which he has other iterations of it out. But this iteration, I don't know if you remember the 80s metal band Wrathchild.
Yeah, that's the band he started, the thrash metal band he started with.
Yeah, that Dimebag Darrell and Vinnie Paul like went and learned from. The original guitarist, Terry Carter, is now in this band with him. And he basically listened to Lost Symphony and was like, hey, Benny, is that you playing keyboards? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I think you should be in my band. And it was literally that simple. And we, Corey, myself, and Javon were all in Florida recording it a month ago with him. And that, it's pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah, he's amazing. I did a tour with him in 2001. He was still playing with the band Amen.
And oh, yeah. Yep.
Dude, unbelievable. Great guy. And as legendary as a drummer as you would imagine. Yeah. So I got to get him on my show at some point.
Shannon. I'll get him on your show. I'll get Shannon.
Literally. Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't have anything to say. I was just saying he's literally a trip.
Well, I screwed up because we had David Abruzzese from Pearl Jam and Shannon on the show. And I was going to have like a drum circle on 2020. Again, an example of us being way over our head. Like, David, you know, tells us everything about what happened with Pearl Jam. So if you care about Pearl Jam, go back and watch those episodes. But we had them on, and I thought that you know, it would be like a solid for Shannon to meet David, thinking that, you know, David with Pearl Jam came before. Meanwhile, David, the first thing he says to Shannon is, I saw you like 1986 with a boa constrictor in some club in Dallas and with Wrathchild America. And like, he knew the single that was out. And he's like, you're fucking amazing. And I didn't know, because I even was jamming with Shannon. I said, that sounded like a Vinnie Paul kind of thing. And he goes, Vinnie Paul, Vincent. Like, let me tell you something. When I was playing with this cover band called Pantera that played Van Halen, I played Ace of Spades by this band called Motorhead, and Vincent came up to me and said, what were you doing with your feet? So maybe it's the other way around. And I'm like, oh my God, this dude just checked me. So like, I have learned that this dude is a legend, but I didn't know. I didn't know. I'm rude.
Now you know. Now you know. So one of the things about starting a podcast during the pandemic or 2020 was that a lot of people did it, right? This was a period of time where we were all at home looking for things to do, and a million podcasts got started, but predictably, not all of them lasted. So do you guys have kind of a long-term plan? Is it kind of like, let's keep it going as long as we can, or you just enjoy it so much? What's like what's the vibe for the future?
It's our LinkedIn, man. We're going to keep doing it as long as we have the coolest people on the show, man. Like, we've never have a chance to talk to these people if we just call them up. But, you know, we've been fortunate that the people come on. Our show is, we kind of dive a little deeper. We do two parts. So we do like, you know, the get to know you part in hour one, and then we dive a little deeper in hour two. And we've found that some people don't want to hang for 2 hours, but a lot of them do. And when they do, they kind of feel a little more open, and it feels more like a conversation, less like an interview. And we often have our guests tell us afterwards, like, wow, I can't believe that went by so fast. And, you know, that was so much fun. I can't wait to come back. And I think that for us, it's the enjoyment of the conversation and the nuggets we get that you don't hear in every other interview that keeps us wanting to do it. Cause, you know, a podcast is a lot of work and it takes time and there's all this stuff. And, you know, at some point maybe we don't talk about the future. We talk about crap. We need a guest next week. You know, that's kind of our way of working, but it's been really rewarding so far. So we don't have any plan to stop. We're trying to grow it at this point and figure out what we can do with this outlet we have.
Yeah. For me, it feels like it took a good year or like, you know, at least, you know, 20, 30, 40 episodes, let's say, to get comfortable with the rhythm and figuring out how it works, figuring out the technology. You know, maybe some people start and then they cut it too soon. You know, I feel like it really takes a while to get the rhythm of your show and your personalities established. And just if you're not used to doing it, just the comfort of doing it and talking to people that you don't know, which isn't for everybody. But yeah, I mean, through build, it takes a while to build the network of relationships and having that lead to other people. So, you know, every new person we talk to, it leads to some other interesting person we want to talk to. So there's kind of no shortage of that umbrella that keeps extending, you know, out into the music industry and beyond. So yeah, for me, it's fascinating. I'd love to do it as long as we possibly can.
Yeah, has it been amenable to your touring schedule? Because for me, I was so busy on the last Bad Wolves tour that I basically took a month off from the show. But that's for a lot of reasons. Like, we were recording on our days off, shooting music videos, and I had the God Forbid reunion. So I was just, any free time I had was working time. So that days I'd usually be working on the podcast on my days off, I really couldn't do it. Have you found a kind of balance to figure out how to still do it while you're on the road?
Yeah, I mean, ideally in a perfect situation, we plan ahead for that and we try and stock up on some episodes, especially it being pre-recorded and not live. We can do that. But, you know, and it also helps that there's three of us. I can imagine it being you and you're kind of the leader doing, finding the people, running the show, having to, you know,
everything.
No, exactly. I mean, it's, you're doing the work that we're dividing between three people. So, but there have been some interesting situations where we're like, we need to do a podcast this week. And I'm like on a bus that's rattling and we're like pulling away and losing connection. And, you know, there have been some unideal circumstances.
Yeah. I will say, Siobhan, you've made probably the most sacrifices to make sure that this show stays on the tracks, because she'll be anywhere in the world and we're just like, hey, like, we need a show this week. Like, we're talking to someone, like, she'll be like running into like some closet in like a venue, like putting headphones on, and she's, you know, she does a great job, and she's at the same time contacting people to like come on the show. So Ben and I, for the most part, yeah, we're busy, but we're not like Siobhan busy traveling around the world. So we can't really, for us, I'd say that we have a much easier job in terms of that. But, you know, Siobhan's been incredible, kind of not only lending us her credibility as an actual real musician, but also making time in her schedule, which is 10 times crazier than anything that Ben and I are dealing with.
Well, also the quality of guests, because like, we'll be like, hey, Siobhan, like, what are we thinking for guests? And she'll be like, oh, I could just, I don't know, I could talk to the guys from Breaking Benjamin. And I'm like, the band that just sold out the Mohegan Sun the other week. And like, we'll talk to Keith Wallen, who's freaking amazing. And I've never met this guy. I barely know anything about Breaking Benjamin. And then I go down to my studio, sign on, and then I get to talk to this. Keith is amazing, dude. Amazing guitar. But like, I feel like I'm being schooled. But and that everybody watching, and I'm sure there's lots of people that do watch, and they're like, how is this guy so pleasantly naive? But it's like Siobhan will have these super highbrow guests that she's friends with. And Corey and I are just like, for example, we had Cody Ash, who's the drummer for Jelly Roll. Are you aware of who Jelly Roll is, Doc?
Yeah, we just played with them twice, like did two festivals the same day, back to back, like a week apart. Got to meet him. Super cool guy. And yeah. I met a few members of the band. They were super, super nice as well. But they're amazing. Like, that dude is blowing up.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, when
they're,
I first
they're
saw
a group
it.
Of animals too. Yeah. They're absolutely
he's like the
animals.
New Kid Rock to me.
yeah, I definitely see that.
Well,
yeah.
so we're sitting on the bus with Cody, the drummer, who's amazing, and he's like, yeah, you know, I think we're gonna play some small theaters. Like, maybe we'll play some bigger stuff. And Corey and I are looking around. Now we're at the Worcester Palladium. And I've been going to that venue since I was three. And I literally, other than maybe back in like the 90s when like Korn or like Rob Zombie or something was playing there, or Rammstein, I think they played there and they got around, like it was a crazy, Rammstein was a crazy show. But other than that, I have never seen it this crazy. By like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, there was a line all around Worcester for this dude. And I'm looking at Corey and I'm like, what the fuck's going on? And meanwhile, Corey and I had sent an email, like, who's the Jelly Roll? Like, is it Jelly Roll a band? Meanwhile, like, this guy apparently, we found out, like, Pete Davidson, you know, the guy that was dating Kim Kardashian, was like, I really love Jelly Roll, and, like, FaceTimed him and, like, flew into the show to go see him. Meanwhile, we're sitting on this other bus. We go into the venue, like, dudes pouring Cavassier and other guy, like, in people's mouths, like, blunts going around, like, It was like a Cypress Hill show times seven. And we found this out, like, on a Monday we interviewed Cody, and on Wednesday we're smoking like blunts and drinking Cavassier on the side of the stage, packed. But and I'm like, I guess I'm just the old guy that's out of touch and just don't know. Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good morning.
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to the show on the road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
I don't even know how we got here.
So, but the point being, we would never have known about that had Siobhan not played a show with Cody earlier, got him on the show. So that's what my favorite part is. We're meeting these people. You know,
he's so good.
Ben and I are you know, the fake musicians. We just live in our basement studios. We don't get to tour around and meet these people. So we bring them on the show, and then I feel like we're hanging out with everyone in the industry and getting to steal all their knowledge and experience. So
you are real musicians.
Absolutely.
The difference between us and you guys is you're just a little more sane, right? It takes a crazy person to go out and just live like a pirate and be away and just and actually be happy out there. Like, you have to be a little like, you're like, I don't need a bed, you know, I'll just live on this little, like, take a like a twin bed, right, and then cut it in half
like, and turn it into a coffin.
I sleep in a coffin, you know, comfortable coffin, you know, and better than a van. But, you know, we're crazy. All right. We're the ones.
Well, that is my secret. My secret is that I'm waiting for one of the guests to be like, oh crap, our guitarist or bassist just broke their toe and we need someone to come out tomorrow. And then I can leave my basement.
Well, so you just want to go do the same thing, not be home, make less money. I see what you want to do.
Oh yeah.
They don't pay you like the weddings on.
Dude, that's why DJing is greatest. Listen, I have like an actual pin of like valor from the Marines because I did a Marine ball, and like this guy with atomic coat.
Seems like so disrespectful.
I know it's ridiculous.
Stolen valor.
He comes up to me and he asks for like a song, like a Rihanna song, because his daughter like wanted it, and like this guy that literally could like change the whole face of the earth, his daughter had him by the balls, and me playing Rihanna saved him. So, like, you know, this sergeant major's like soldier, and I'm like, I'm just playing Rihanna. So, like, I realize that DJing and anything to do with weddings or funerals, in fact, are just cheating. Like, you know, if you could do it on your own. But, like, being a wedding DJ, I know plenty of friends in touring bands that absolutely do not make the same kind of money that I would make a gig. It's absolutely sad. I mean, playing huge festivals. Meanwhile, I'm playing Earth, Wind, and Fire. Everybody at that bar mitzvah thinks I wrote that song and I'm performing it right now. And I'm making more than the guys in Anthrax, probably. not Scott Ian.
Well, the wedding thing is like just a big trick, right? In that anything you take like a normal price, you're like, oh, I want this dress. It's like, okay, that dress is $1,000. But that same dress is a wedding dress now, it's $5,000, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
DJ, it's like, oh, I need your DJ's party. Okay, I'm going to charge you, you know, $1,500 to do that. Oh, you want a DVD wedding? That's be $10,000. Like, it's the same shit. You just put wedding on it. All of a sudden, it costs 10 times as much.
Well, do you know the difference between a $1,000 DJ and a $10,000 DJ?
I just said it. Wedding.
No. One just asks for it.
Oh, yeah.
You just ask $10,000, please. It doesn't have to even be for a wedding. You could be like, I used to open for Avicii. Boom.
There you go. There you go. Or... You go, I'm a Deadmau5. And it's like, no one knows what he looks like. It's just show up with just get the helmet. Boom, you're Deadmau5, right? And now, he might sue you, or he might get a cease and desist, but it might take a while for people to figure out. Or you just, like, change one of the letters, you know, Deadmau5. You know, maybe I had an extra Z or something on there, and boom.
Just spell it correctly, because I think he uses a 5 or something.
There, so you go.
Deadmau5.
There you go.
There you go.
I actually just came up with the best idea for like a cover / tribute band. And I haven't figured out the name of it yet. I don't know if I'm gonna call it Black Creed or was it Creedence Blackwater Revival? Anyway, I'm gonna dress up like Apollo Creed and then I'm gonna sing Creed songs.
Can you do it with half of Metallica in your band? Cause that would be even cooler.
No. This is my venture. All right.
It's a solo project.
Listen, I got a good grunge voice, like Jarl voice. So I think I would crush it. But I think this would be huge. All right. You know, I don't think you guys think it'll be.
I'll open it with arms wide open. And I'll accept you, Doc.
No, but I'll come out. I'll come out to the living in America and go right into his fucking heavy ass Creed song. Would be sick. But anyway, yeah, I have a lot of dumb ideas. Okay, right.
I think our most recent idea on the tour bus at like 3 a.m. was like, let's put together a band that's Motley Crue in the style of Garth Brooks. And I'm like, what? Okay. I don't know whose idea this was, but somehow we rolled with it for a while and it almost became a thing.
It's funny you say that because I was going to say, because Corey and I, we actually were on the Thunder Rolls, the Garth Brooks cover from All That Remains with Ollie Herbert. They called us up when they were doing it, because Ollie needed to put like better guitar parts on it. So Corey and I just worked on it. So, and then you said it just rolls. So we did the Thunder Rolls in the style of All That Remains, but it's a Garth Brooks song. So there's that.
Well, I figure like with that, so have you guys ever heard of Metalachi?
Mm-mm.
So no. It's like I think it's an LA band or a California band, but it's just like a Mexican mariachi band, but they do all rock and metal songs. They do like Bon Jovi, and they do Motley Crue, but
is it in the style of mariachi?
Yeah, and they're
that's
sick.
Amazing.
That's
and they have like a I think like a fiddle player, whatever it does all the solos, yeah. And damn. Just shreds.
I want to hear. Yeah, I want to listen.
They're amazing. Awesome. They're amazing. But I figure if you're gonna do like the country kind of version of that, you know, you just need the one lead person that can kind of sing and kind of pull it off and pull off the vibe. But and once you get that, it'll all fall into place. You know what? That motherfucker probably already exists in Nashville already. There's so many great cover bands, and you know, it has to exist in Nashville, right?
I think everything exists in Nashville. There you go. Probably.
There you go. I had another question for you guys. Considering what the show, your guys' podcast is based on, this kind of hardship we went through. Do you guys personally feel like you're a different person now than you were kind of before the pandemic, and especially like how that's affected how you approach your career, or you know, the way we write, like how we put out music, how we tour, like how has this whole experience of the pandemic and then also speaking to all these people and giving you their kind of stories with that, how has that kind of affected you? You doing all right after the pandemic? How you feeling?
Who wants one to go at a time? First?
Whoever wants to jump in.
Ladies first.
Shimon. Ladies first.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And I've had other people ask me this, and I mean, for so many reasons. Yeah, definitely the conversations we've had, like, you know, my perspective is coming from the schooled world of classical music and being told, okay, you have to do things this way and you have to have a degree for something to be relevant. And I think having talked to all the people we've talked to in the show and learning about all their backgrounds and some of the stuff they've went through and like carving their own paths, you know, in face of adversity and without having gone to school for music or certain things and, you know, having people not believe in them, I think, yeah, it totally gave me a refreshed perspective on my career and how things are okay to do, even if you didn't go to school for it, you know? So it really encouraged me to learn a lot about recording and taking risks in the way I play music and not just following the rules all the time. So, you know, in a nutshell, I would say that's kind of how it's changed my perspective, made me a lot more, I think, optimistic. And yeah, I mean, it was a hard time to go through the pandemic, but I think the fact that we got to talk to all these people and hear their stories helped a lot.
Do you feel like it's back to, considering you're back on the road and with Starset, is it kind of back to business as usual?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, the first tour we went back, it was still a little bit, depending on the region, you might have experienced this too. Like certain places that we played, you know, when we came back for the first time, like some regions, it was like half the amount of people showed up as usual because of different mandates. And then other places, it was like unaffected. And now it really feels like, since there are way less restrictions, it's pretty much back to normal. But I think people have a renewed like passion for going to concerts just because it's been gone for so long. I'm sure almost everyone experienced that, you know, it's just being back, you know, for real. It's like people are way more wild about music, I think, than they were before.
Sure. Anyone else chime in?
I know my takeaway from everything we've been doing, you know, when we started, you know, our first few guests were people that were kind of directly involved with Lost Symphony because we had that connection from the work we were doing. So it was cool, first off, just to talk to people that we had only known through their playing for the most part. You know, a few emails went back and forth, but to actually like dive into like, oh, you know, one of the guys like Richard Shaw, formerly of Cradle of Filth, but he was one of the first guys that I didn't know prior to the Lost Symphony project. Then we get to talk to him for like 2 hours on the podcast. And I'm like, this guy's the man. And you know, I would never think that this like guitarist who Cradle of Filth, he's talking about his musical theater background and like all these things. And that was the first time I was like, oh, I'm like, this could actually be kind of cool to find out more about people that you only get to hear 16 bars of notes to get to know them a lot of times. So for me, it was cool to get a little bit more depth in meeting people that are doing what I want to do with my life and playing music and recording and touring and all that stuff. So it reaffirmed a lot of things, you know, in terms of following, you know, once you hear, you know, we've got 155 episodes out right now and hearing the common threads of how these people found success and how often it was because they persisted through failure until mm-hmm. that opportunity came up. It's one of those things where, you know, you sound at this point, everyone's like, oh, you just, you know, you gotta give 110% and all, like there's a lot of platitudes that a lot of self-help people have, but hearing the full stories from these people that are doing, you know, these jobs at the highest level and being very successful and hearing how important those, you know, sometimes cliches actually are, if you dive deep, has been the biggest thing for me. And just like reaffirming that, okay, that is the right mindset to have, you know, no matter what you're doing, as long as you're going in the right direction and, you know, seeing how just being ready for that opportunity can be what takes you to the next level or take you in a completely different direction than you thought you'd be going 6 months ago.
I mean, I'm with Corey on this. It's been an honor because the thing is, you know, COVID was a scary thing. I know you felt this, Doc, and everyone in any kind of entertainment. I like, for example, as a DJ, I had an agency I was working with and I had just spent like 50 grand of money I had raised to start a DJ business, to spend like, you know, 10 grand to advertise and all that. Like all this money was gone. And then it was like, oh, and COVID. I'm like, oh my God. And like everything I, you know, you think as a DJ, like that's a strong business. Like people are always going to party and they're always going to have weddings and they're all. And then I'm like, I'm not going to make any money next month. And then as a musician too, it's like, okay, well, the other things that I would normally be able to do, I can't do any of those things. It was really a scary experience. And the thing is, so when we're talking about people on our show, so for example, to give you some things that have happened on our show, we had Miles Kennedy from Alter Bridge and, you know, sings with Slash, talk about how he literally got into Led Zeppelin, into the band. Like when Robert Plant was not having it, they were going to hire Miles Kennedy. He told us on the show, and I'm thinking to myself, and he thanked us for coming on. Like he was a genuinely awesome dude. And I remember like calling our buddy Steve Wood, who was another amazing guest of ours, and be like, I can't even believe how amazing that was. And Miles had just come off Rick Beato. And he called back Steve, who had suggested him coming on the show. He was like, these guys are great. And I'm like, Miles Kennedy, the guy that got into to Led Zeppelin. And then we had Steve Wood, the guy who got him on, who manages, again, like Godsmack. He manages Johnny Depp, works at Shelter Music. And he told us about being the tour manager for Soundgarden the night they broke up. Told us everything. Like, everything. And I'm like, you're going to tell me details to the point where Corey and I are like, can we even put this on? And like, I couldn't believe that like more people didn't talk about it, like a Blabbermouth or whatever. Same thing with like David Abruzzese. Like we had him on and like, I've always wondered like what happened with Pearl Jam. And he talks about like literally, you know, they hit number one and like Eddie Vedder was like all bummed out and like all some crazy, just crazy stuff, even touring with U2 and that like, you know, the bass player would leave and then his tech would just go stand in for him and no one would know, just take the stand. Oh, he was friends with Axl Rose for 5 years of Chinese Democracy. And Axl said, take the ship of Guns N' Roses. I didn't freaking know that. I learned that going into my studio, signing onto a Zoom for 2020 to talk to a legend that I had no business knocking to. And it's all been like a selfish thing for me. So like, what's the future? I want to keep getting people above my pay grade to tell me how they got further in life than I've ever even fathomed. And that's what, so how have I changed? I've realized that I should just continue down this path of maniacal craziness with music versus doing anything that will help pay off my mortgage. Because everyone on my show, like on our show, has been successful by just going and doing it. Just not me yet.
Well, but on top of that, it's been like an education. I mean, I think for all of us, but especially me, having come from a totally different world, I mean, this has been like a course in music history for me from the people that built it. you know, and that informs the way that you play. It informs the way that you record. It informs how you interact with other people. And, you know, I feel like in the back of my mind, I take all those stories with me, you know, when I'm playing with Starset or something else, or when I'm thinking about like, oh, what can I do? Who can I think back to that made a comment or a suggestion of how to approach something that I can like take into a project that I'm doing now?
Give us a guest. Give us a guest, because they don't know who's been on our show. Like, that's the thing I'm most proud of as a Jewish mother is all the freaking guests we've had, because they're so above our people. It's really great, because we say, oh, we've had guests, but it's like when I go back and think about who we've talked to, it's incredulous. Like, I am so honored. Like, again, to have someone like Mark Tremonti take 2 hours and then share, like, his ability to write songs and like basically write riffs and then put them together. Like, he has a whole system. He shared it with us. Like, he shared the way that he wrote those Creed songs, the way he wrote all those Tremonti songs, those Alderbridge songs, and how it was like this code. And he took the time. And again, after he got off, like, he seemed happy to talk to us for 2 hours. Like, we can't even believe people will stay on with us that long. It's crazy.
Well, I can identify with all that, because we've shared quite many guests. So he's like, yo, he told me that. I'm like, he told me that too.
The podcast world is a bit incestuous in that way. Yeah.
It is. You know these publicists do. They're coming after us like headhunters.
But that's because you're a great podcast host, you know, and having been on the sidelines of seeing like these short form radio interviews, which I'm sure you're familiar with too. It's like, yeah, you don't always get those stories, because it just depends on the perspective of the person that's asking. You know, what's fun for me is I didn't really grow up listening to a lot of the people that we interview. I know Ben and Corey are like fans of a lot of the people that we talk to, but for me, I'm approaching them as just humans, right? Like, how did you grow up? Like, how did you learn about music? And I kind of like to go into things not knowing anything, because I like, you know, my interest is in pulling out that sort of human element that sort of transcends what they do professionally. And I think having the three different perspectives of the three of us kind of works. And maybe that's why it's more fun for some people, you know, it's unusual.
So how does this all factor into the music side of it? Do you guys have, is it just kind of, is the train rolling, more music, more podcasts, the unit? This is just moving towards the future together with some cool ideas. What's going on musically?
Who wants
to go on, Ben? I was going to say, so with Lost Symphony, each album is kind of a progression. And so, you know, you said, how long has it been going on? Like, the song Leave Well Enough Alone, which is the archetype for our band. And by archetype, I mean, it's like what we sent around to all the people at the beginning to be like, do you think we're pretty? You want to play with us? Like, that's what we sent around. That song was written 25 years ago. I was 14 years old, literally started writing. I recorded it 25 years ago with my brother. So when I say like we worked on this for a long time, before I even met Siobhan, we'd been working on it for 3 or 4 years. And we're like, oh yeah, we've been programming strings. And Siobhan's like, all these string parts are all wrong. And we're like, oh? And next thing we know, like, the idea of having an orchestra is Siobhan. So we've kind of progressed. So this new song that we're doing, you know, it's hard. We've released 3 full records. So the next song that we're doing, I guess the inspiration for it's kind of like the overture from Tommy from The Who, in that, like, when you listen to that 9.5 minute song, it's kind of like all the different themes for the different songs. Here's a little bit of Pinball Wizard. Here's a little bit of Go to the Mirror. That's kind of what I did this time. Instead of like trying to get, you know, this grandiose thing, I was like, why don't we just put together this super tune? And, you know, I was lucky enough that on 2020, we met Susanna, the cellist from Starset, and then Marco, who was in Starset, but also plays for like the Raiders home team. She was playing with Adele. She played with Madonna, like absolutely ridiculous level cellist. We're like, will you play with us? They're like, yeah. So next thing we know, we have a string section. And then we're recording Shannon Larkin and the Apocalypse Blues Revival. And then next thing you know, like, we meet these brass players like this. Here's an unbelievable trombone player. I've always wanted to meet a trombone player because I love like Batman and like all that, like all that evil sounding. That's a trombone. That's a badass metal instrument. So like, no metal band has a trombone player. So
this,
like,
is the longest digression I've ever heard.
We're recording that on Monday. So like, the new Lost Symphony song is going to be more of like a we've leveraged our strength. We've met all these incredible musicians, and now where it was more of like, I guess, a metal thing, it's did you call it Broadway, Siobhan? Like, how would you describe what we're doing now?
Yeah, it's a fusion of different things. I mean, well, the short form answer to your question is yes, more music. At the moment, I guess I would say we're working on a single, but not a single in the radio sense. it's really like a, you know, what, a 12, 13 minute song that is kind of like an overture, you know, almost multiple songs in one, kind of showcasing all the different things, the strengths that we've built up over the years. So, yeah, it's got some Broadway elements, it's symphonic, it's, you know, rock, it's metal, it's got a little bit of everything like Lost Symphony does.
Yeah. And the podcast and the band, while that they're always going to be tied together just because of us being in the project, they kind of are running along two parallel tracks. So we do have like a, you know, primary focus on the podcast at time, primary focus on the band. But there, whereas we started this show out talking to people from Lost Symphony and always kind of being like, this was our way to stay in the music world during the pandemic. Now that we've kind of, the show's evolved into this space where we're really just a show that looks at these careers of successful people, there's a little bit more of a split in that sense. So we are breaking them away just a little bit, but they're still running right across from each other. So when we're not working on one, we're working on the other. And it gives us a good kind of break to bounce back and forth as well.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, instrumental music is hard, you know, music without vocals, music that is over 3.5-4 minutes is hard, you know? So I think we're still in the process of figuring out, like, you know, who is our target audience and, you know, of course, making music that we love, that's what we're always going to do, but figuring out how to make the most of that too, because you do have to navigate it in a sense of like, how do we make this successful? Cause of course that's what we want. So, you know, figuring that out is also in the plan. So it's just a work in progress.
Do you think you'd ever do a song with a singer?
I mean, I'm open to anything, but I guess as a collective, it's up to the group decision.
Well, it's funny because we did some charities for Metal Injection over COVID. And, you know, we did Lost Symphony, but we always
slay
had
it,
singers.
Slay at Home. Slay at Home. Festival.
Slay at Home. Yeah, Slay at Home. But everything we've done so far has been like a cover, but it's been with like all and again, cherry pick people that I think are amazing. I sound again like my kid's the greatest at school, but like we did Bark at the Moon, with like Joey Concepcion, who's an incredible guitarist. He plays with Josta and, Dark Tranquility. He's an absolute maniac. But you know, we got, Scott Levesque from a band called Wheat from back in the 90s to sing on that. But then we did Gates to Babylon, a Rainbow song. And we got David Abruzzese from, we had him on the show. We're like, hey, you want to play some Dio? Sure. It's not a song with us. So, and then I think we did Mean Street for Van Halen. We did a few different covers, I guess, during COVID to kind of see if we were still alive. And we got different singers. So it's not like it's out of the question. But so far on a record, there's been no singing. But I think if we could get Bruce Dickinson or... you know, someone like that, maybe I'd think about it.
Setting the bar low, huh?
Yeah.
Always.
I didn't say Blaze Bailey. I know, I'm sorry. He's actually amazing. There. Just not an Iron Maiden. He's amazing. I just didn't like it in Iron Maiden like everybody else. It's like Gary Cherone and Van Halen. It's like, I love Gary Cherone. I think he's like one of my favorite singers and one of my favorite people. But like, yeah, he got screwed in Van Halen because like, you know.
It's a tough job. Well, listen, y'all, I think we've covered all the stuff I want to cover, because really this, you know, show for me is about just introducing what you all do to the X-Men audience, because, you know, me and Benny have been talking, we're going to do some stuff with you guys over the next few months. And I'm looking forward to having you part of some of the stuff we're doing on the X-Men. But I really appreciate you all taking time out of your day. Is there anything to promote? Is there anything you guys want to talk about coming up that people should check out?
I thought you were going to tell us how to run a podcast. That's why I'm here.
I don't know. I haven't done one in like 5 weeks. So usually my first one back, I'm a little stuttery. I'm a little. I'm not my sharpest. So that, you know.
No, you're hopefully. Great. That's what we have Ben for, to fill all the dead space, right? he has words for days.
Yeah. So stuff to check out. If you guys haven't heard 2020, it's 2020-D.com, and you can get it, like consume it however you consume it, whether it's watching it on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or all that stuff. LostSymphony.com will get you to kind of all the stuff we've done. And just, I guess, to go over it, like, you know, we've been really fortunate. We got to do songs with everybody from like Jeff Loomis and Marty Friedman, Nuno Betancourt, David Ellison. I mean, one of the things that made it, again, easier to get some of these crazy players, like, you know, we got David Ellison to play on songs with Marty Friedman, which I believe is, you know, the first time that those guys played together in over two decades. Wow. Was when Ollie left us. It was one of those things where it was like, we talked about this all the time. It's like, what? Well, what if we did get Marty Friedman and Nuno on a song with Alex Skolnick? And then when he left us, I was like, okay, challenge accepted, Ollie. And that's what we did for Take Another Piece. We got Nuno, Marty Friedman, and Alex Skolnick. And I knew that Ollie, wherever he was, would be smiling. So, you know, when he left us, we kind of started, you know, making it as much for us, but also for him.
Is there a song I should play on the show that you guys, that's new-ish, that you want to show the people?
Take Another Piece might be a good example.
Yeah, Take Another Piece is probably the one
there you go.
I'd play. And then I'm the Neurotic Guitarist. You have to come on to my my YouTube channel, but theneuroticguitarist.com. I review the 170 guitars or so I have here, and I go interview people and have fun with guitar stuff. So
how many guitars do you have?
I'm actually over 170 stringed instruments at this point.
Okay. Well, I know how you're going to pay you that mortgage. All right. We need to start moving some units around here. All right.
Every time I post anything on Craigslist, I get like messages from people like, wait a minute. Is that a guitar store or is that your... I'm like, oh shit, I should probably not put my location.
Probably don't put your address.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah,
don't do that.
No.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for being on the show. This was so much
thank
fun.
You,
man.
Thank and, you,
thank you.
Of course, of course. Yeah, check them out. Support Lost Symphony 2020. Y'all be good. We'll be seeing y'all soon. Take care.
All right, care. You too. Thanks, Doc.
Bye. So you just heard Take Another Piece from Lost Symphony from their Chapter 3 album, which came out in 2021. And that track features Marty Friedman, Nuno Bettencourt, Alex Skolnick, and Richard Shaw. So nothing but heavy hitters on that one. And I really enjoyed that. I felt like that was like Bill and Ted, the band, you know, just every part was the most triumphant part until the next part, which was equally mostly triumphant. if you want to check them out, go to their website. I think it's lostsymphony.com, something like that. I got it up here. I lost the website. Anyway, look it up. Lost Symphony. Easy to find. The Google. You guys can do it. And their podcast, it's 2020-D.com. And check their show out, man. They do have a ton of great guests. And we do share some guests. But, you know, I'm sure they ask completely different questions than me. You know, going a whole different world. But I hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm going to be doing some stuff with them over the next few months. Maybe some, like, guest stuff. Maybe we'll do some little pop-in. I don't know. We're trying to figure it out. Corey, Benny, Siobhan, thank you so much for being on the show. That was a lot of fun. And I hope you guys, you know, learn something. That's what it's all about, baby. Learn a little bit. All right. It's past one here. For some reason, this show, I always start this late and then I end up working late. And that's how it is. But I was like, you know what? I'm not going to wait till next week. I'm going to get the show out this week. So it's going to come out Thursday. A little weird, but whatever. Sometimes you're like, okay, so maybe a lot of podcasts come out early in the week. Maybe might come out late in the week. That's all right. It'll be fine. I have a busy week. I'm going to multiple shows. I'm going to see Rammstein on Friday, Iron Maiden and Trivium on Sunday. And there's a bunch of shows coming up. Meshuggah and In Flames is coming up. It sucks. Lamb of God's playing here like the day I think we fly out or the day after we fly out. So gonna miss some shows, but I gotta try and go out. I wrecked my car before I left for tour, so I've been kind of stranded. Trying to see if I can get this damn thing fixed. Sucks, guys. Sucks not having a car. So I feel like I'm a little all over the place right now, but trying to wrap it up, you know, to the best of my ability. But thanks for joining me once again. I love all of you, and more shows to come. All right, it's only uphill from here. All right, love y'all. Be good. Mamba's out.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!